Who's that?
I have officially turned on recording. This is the Aries Working Group afternoon call. There was not a morning call this week. That's every other week, but there will be next week. We're hoping to talk about DIDDOC conventions and peer DID implementations today, although Tobias Looker was going to lead us through the discussion of DIDDOC conventions, and he isn't here yet. So he might not be able to make it today, and I will... I'll either accept a volunteer or I will endeavor to jump into that topic. We have some RFCs that update that. So, and then later on in the day, we have Daniel Hardman. We'll be talking about peer DID implementations to further discussion. And I think he's got some example stuff actually working. So that is what is on the agenda today. Remember the Hyperledger Code of Conduct and the antitrust policy. The Linux Foundation antitrust policy is in effect. Let's be excellent to each other. Here's the attendees list. And if I do this right, there you go. The chat has been updated with a link to the agenda here. Are there anyone on the call that hasn't previously been on a call that would like to introduce themselves? This is entirely voluntarily, but voluntary. And we've learned that if we don't do it in the beginning, we don't have time at the end.
Well, I don't know that I've been on a call before, but I was just lurking. So I'm happy to introduce myself.
Please do. And that's welcome to anyone else as well. If you have been lurking and have not before, you're welcome to introduce.
Yeah, my name is Samuel Smith. I'm on the TGB, the Sovereign Technical Governance Board, and have been participating in the decentralized identity space for a few years. And I like programming in Python.
Perfect. Thank you, Sam. Anyone else? Okay. If you would like to in the future or have something to say, please speak up. These tend to be fairly interactive calls and we appreciate them that way. Announcements. BCGov is working on collaborating with groups for mobile agents. Please reach out to Stephen Curran. There was a Code With Us bounty awarded to Matter Global for a KeyCloak OpenID Connect integration. We also have links to Hypes here. There's repos. It was Cloud Edge Python has been transferred. That's a bunch of effort that went into that. We appreciate the BCGov team for doing so. And then the Aries framework Go has been created, has just been added. So that's excellent. Any other announcements that we need to cover? Not on the list. All right. Related meetings. The prior calls recording is posted, and we talked about DIDDOCs and a handful of other useful things. All of the agendas are available here in the wiki, and we've got them sorted so that the newest ones are at the top and the older ones are at the bottom. And so if you click into the afternoon call, we talked about the protocol test suite and the other stuff here. I try to update this to what actually happened. And then down here at the bottom, there are the call recording links as soon as those get uploaded. I can't do it immediately after the meeting because Zoom takes a minute sometimes for me to actually send me the links. But as soon as I get them, I try to get them up. That is last week's call. And then we have next week, we will be having a morning call as well. We didn't have one this morning, but that will be the morning. And Richard, do you have any preview or notes about that morning call?
I put in a sample agenda so people who want to add stuff can. I did get the recording for last week uploaded, and so that's on last week's wiki page, the agenda page. It was a very light last call last time. It was mostly introductions, and we talked a little bit about libvcx and how it's going to evolve in an Aries world, meaning it mostly will change. It'll mostly stop being part of Aries is the expectation. So we appreciate any feedback people have on that as well.
Excellent. Ursa, any news from the Ursa world? I know Mike is otherwise occupied today. And Ken probably. Any updates about Indie Semantics as well? All right. Releases and work updates. I know BCGov is busy today. They've got a training that they're doing up in Canada, highlighting some of the ARI stuff. Are there any upcoming releases and work updates on the list at all that we want to talk about? RFC progress, I'll highlight. We have a discussion planned later in the day for moving some RFCs through and looking for changing their status. But any other of the work projects?
Two things on the RFC progress, and we can cover this maybe in a later call. But I noticed the sovereign SIPs. There are a number of sovereign SIPs that later became indie hypes that then became ARIES RFCs. But there's no note on the sovereign SIP. So that might be something we should...
Is there a note that points to the hype?
No, there's nothing on the sovereign SIP that indicates the sovereign SIP is not the primary document anymore.
We'll have to update that. That's a good point. We'll have to update that. I'm not sure we had as much of a push when we moved and opened up hypes for the same thing that we did when we moved over to ARIES.
Sam?
Yeah, yes.
The ARIES framework Go is this should not have John C in parentheses, should have Troy or Trust Block. I don't know how you want to put that in there.
That's good. I had the wrong person.
Perfect. Thank you for your work there. Any other work updates?
And then on the, I noticed a question on the RFCs. Where's the connection protocol being tracked right now? Is that in a hype that still needs to move to ARIES? Because I didn't see it in the ARIES RFCs.
It was renamed to Data Exchange.
Thanks.
We don't have a good way in the index to actually highlight something like an alternative name. So Data Exchange. Where am I finding it now? I can't find it.
I found it. It's 0023.
23. Yes. So that's where the current status of that is.
And then on the Indie SDK, the goal is to update Indie SDK support newer platforms, and we want to do that using the new GitLab CI/CD that the foundation's setting up. So we expect that progress to happen over the next little while. Evernim's next priority is we need to get DID doc support into Indie, and we're trying to figure out, is that something we should do in Indie SDK? Is it something we should do in an ARIES SDK of some sort? We're a bit confused where to implement that. So that's a topic. Anybody has feedback, let us know.
Yeah, we might be able to bring that up later. Depending on particularly who actually shows up and when for the conversations that we're planning to have today. One of the thoughts that we had is that it might be worth actually bringing over portions of the Indie SDK, specifically the wallet type stuff, and not necessarily the credentials type stuff initially. And that might ease the transition so that we're not trying to bring it all over at once. It strikes me that in that process, there's two places where DIDDocs actually apply. One is the... one is in each individual resolver. So the indie resolver would actually need to be able to return DID docs, fully fleshed out stuff. And the wallet itself would be nice if it had some sort of support for, storing or caching DID docs, particularly when it comes to the peer DID method. So there's that as well.
Excellent. That's the, and we do have the proposal. I'll put the link in here where Evernim put together our proposal for how we could do that migration, but I haven't received any feedback on it. So really curious if that's something we should do before we implement DIDDoc support, or if we should just do it in Indie. That's what we're trying to figure out.
Okay.
And then the last thing is LiveVCX in Indie SDK, we've removed the dependency on the agency. That's going to be released at the end of the month. And so a lot of that dependency on the Evernim's agency was a blocker for a lot of people. So people who might be interested in playing with it should give it another look, especially now that there's another cloud agent that can be used with it, with the ARIES cloud agent being ready. Tying LiveVCX and the ARIES cloud agent together could end the sovereign connector app. That piece of work could provide for a very nice open source end-to-end code base if people wanted to play with that.
Yes. Okay. Definitely. Yep. Thank you, Richard. Any other work updates? Okay, on the agenda, we have two main topics that we tried to allot some time for, and it doesn't look like Tobias has made it. Is there anyone else familiar with the DIDDOC convention that would like to run through that? If no one volunteers, I will give it an attempt, because I think it's very timely to bring that up and talk it through. Don't all volunteer at once.
I don't know the conventions. I'm one of the reasons I'm here on the call is to listen to you, to someone run through them. And so I can, as a DIDDOC editor, go, do we have all those things covered?
I'm trying to remember if we named this one or not, or if we renamed it. Here we go. I'll give it an attempt. This is something that's worth figuring out so that we can talk about and build upon the standardizations for how we construct invitations and what we expect to put in a DID document, right? If you're participating in DIDCOMS with another party and you both support it, you've got to have some standards about what you actually expect to find and how you begin communication, right? And so that's what this document highlights. I prefer that Tobias was here to talk about it, but I will do my best to cover the topics and we can talk about anything that comes up. The point here is that we're building this on top of DIDs, of course. So DIDs have DID documents. Inside a DID document is a service pointer. And the service convention that we're looking for is how we apply this stuff to the or what we expect to find in a service pointer that enables DID communication. And so there's an ID and a type here, and then the three main elements, and we'll get into these in a minute. The three main elements that are really interesting here are the recipient keys, the routing keys, and the service endpoint. The service endpoint is the most obvious one. That is where you you're going to send DIDCOM messages, and with an expectation that they will be handled appropriately according to the DID for which this service pointer exists. The recipient keys is the keys that you would use when you're preparing the encrypted envelope in order to transmit it to the endpoint. And then the routing keys are the keys used after you encrypt the message in order to provide additional steps of routing as requested by the person who published this DID document. And so those are the main topics here. Before I dive deeply into them, are there any initial questions, comments?
just one. It's not really specifically about this, but since we're extending the service block here, are we? I guess I could open the doc and look. But are we going to define the context for these additional properties, JSON LD context?
So we could. The reason why I think this hasn't been updated yet is because the DID spec as late has been more of a moving target, and we haven't been able to track it more precisely.
It's more of a procedural thing that we would if that gets locked in, because there hasn't really been any discussion about changing the basic JSON LD structure and context definition. So. Assuming that doesn't change, we will want to just define the context for DID docs that include these DIDCOM service endpoints.
Right. And so that context would take the role of the type right here, right? Where you're saying, here's what's going on in here.
Exactly.
That way, in the presence of multiple service pointers, you can tell which one you're interested in, and you're interested in the one that enables DID communication.
Hey Sam, this is Jack Callahan. Is there a registry for those types?
I don't believe. As long as it's JSON LD non-conflicting, I don't believe you have to be registered to do that. But certainly, that would be useful.
Jack, that's one of the reasons I was asking you about the registration of the not registration. The what we would publish here in this document, and this would be the RFC for it, is the JSON LD context that defines these property types. And we do that properly. There's no other.
Exactly. Stuff. Okay, good. Good. Actually, getting away from central registries, I'm all for it.
What, you mean you're advocating decentralization? You're one of those crazies?
Tough sell in this crowd. It's tough sell.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yes. So we'll need to bring this up to date, but there's not a lot of controversy about this per se. There is some discussion about whether it would ever make sense to have more than one. And then the answer I think is probably yes. So the idea is more controversial. I don't think there's any controversy around the type specification, which could be taken over by the context.
Cool.
The goal there though, is that the type is something consistent that you can look for when you're looking through the available services so that you know which ones you can actually talk to. It does actually make sense possibly to have more than one of the same type. For example, if you have if you had different endpoints or different, let's say you supported both HTTPS and WebSockets, you could list them both as service endpoints. They both can be DID communication, but you might provide different routing or recipient keys based on that. You don't have to, incidentally. You'll also notice these are DID key references. We'll get to key references versus inline in a second. But when it's inside of a DID document, it's preferred to use a key reference.
Hey, can I add something to that? This is Marcus.
Yeah, please.
I just wanted to add in DID resolution, it will also be possible to resolve DIDs and select specific services or specific keys either by ID or by type. So we think that will be a built-in feature of DID resolution and also of DID URLs, right? So we have DIDs and then we have DID URLs. What you have here in the ID field is actually a DID URL referencing one specific service, one specific key. And that will also be specified how to construct DID URLs that reference one specific service or even a set of services with a given type. That's actually one of the open questions right now in the DID spec community, whether we want matrix parameters as part of a DID URL that can identify a set of services with a given type. But it's probably not a topic for this call, but I just wanted to say selecting these services and keys, that's also part of the DID resolution work.
Marcus, thank you for bringing that up. Is the type selection going to be able to select services based on the JSON-LD context used?
Not based on the JSON-LD context, but based on the types which are defined in the JSON-LD context. Like here's the type is DID communication, so you could say, give me all the services associated with a certain DID of a given services of a given type for a specific DID.
But it's based on the type, not necessarily upon the full type that includes the context information. So,
yeah, you're asking Sam a question that is one of the sort of detailed points that we still have to nail down between the DID spec and DID resolution spec is whether, and Marcus, type selection by type was on the bubble. It was not something that was on. We're restarting those calls starting tomorrow now that we're finished with the DID working group charter. But we need to, if we've got use cases where folks need selection by type, we really need to know that so we can get it in the spec.
Well, and specifically, I could have two separate contexts that happen to define the same type, and now I wouldn't necessarily, have a clean way to select one just based on one specific context. Inside of the other thing with JSON-LD is that context can be used, and that can help define multiple things inside of these. And I believe it's valid JSON-LD to actually. Rather than having a relative type, if you will, defined in the context, you can actually have a fully qualified type that combines the context and the type in the same string. And that provides the advantage of being able to, there's some downsides in the JSON-LD world, but the upside is that now you have a sort of a fully qualified type.
I imagine in DID resolution, we haven't really written that down, but I imagine selection by type would always be done based on a fully qualified URI, so independent of what it looks like in the document. So there would never be any risk of confusion.
Okay, that'll totally solve the problem. And I don't have a huge, I think the goal is that we have a way of saying, give me all of the DID communication service blocks. And the particulars about how that looks, I don't think is very controversial, at least in this crowd. But yes, good. And I appreciate you bringing that up, Marcus. So those that would like to be involved in that conversation about the spec, then please reach out, and I'm sure Drummond can tell you how to be properly involved. The service endpoint is not super controversial here, just that the two that we have been using or discussing inside of DIDComs is both HTTPS and WebSockets are the two that you can expect to find. There doesn't seem to be a ton controversial there. The recipient keys is also fairly uncontroversial. It is an array. It is entirely possible that the owner of this DID document wants you to do some multiple destination encryption, which the encryption envelope supports. And that would allow for you to encrypt the message to multiple keys, and then any of the keys listed would be able to decrypt the message. That can be useful in a variety of scenarios where the message might be, a message might be sent to multiple endpoints or multiple agents for the same user. Any questions about service endpoints or recipient keys? So routing keys is the more interesting one because that's the mechanism that we've been talking about for DIDCOM to be able to route messages in a way that overcomes network consideration issues or disconnection or those sorts of things. And so the routing keys is interesting. From the sender's perspective, routing keys is relatively simple. You have an operation that you perform per routing key in the list. After you've packaged the message for the recipient, the agents being asked to do the routing do not have the opportunity to inspect the message along the way. It's encrypted on the way through, but they're passing the message along to the next hop. I'll note that the service endpoint listed here is the service endpoint you're going to send the message to after all of the preparation is done. And so the service endpoint here typically correlates with the last routing key in the list. And that's important because that's the first hop you actually send it to, and the sender is typically unaware of the other service endpoints for the intermediate steps along the routing path. So you're gonna prep it by encrypting it by the recipient keys. You will perform the forward wrapping step once per routing key, and then you will transmit the thing that you end up with, that outer envelope that you're done with to the service endpoint listed here. And it's the responsibility of the person whoever publishes the DID doc, to make any arrangements they need to with the routing services or whatever is there, and package this information up correctly. It's not very difficult, but that's the responsibility of the publisher of the DID doc or the receiver of these messages. So the routing keys. Yep.
Let me just briefly ask, for those of us who are not intimately familiar with how routing's been defined, what is done with each routing key?
Let me see how it's defined here. Okay, so I don't see it here. There's a link here that I'm going to try and follow.
If it's just another, if it's all explained in another doc, you can just point me at it
I'm going to try and get you there so that you can go look and see what's going on.
I was going to say, if it's not clear, I think a lot of folks will have that question if they start with this doc, so it'd be good to put in a link.
Yes, so there's a theoretical doc here, and there's a more practical one.
Okay.
It might be here. We need to do a slightly better job actually pulling this out. there's some overlap between these documents as well that we should probably try and resolve. Here's the fundamental piece of what happens. For each key, you're going to create a new message that is a forward message. You're going to designate it to the key that you're actually sending it to, and then you're going to include the message that was previously encrypted. So you're going to encrypt the message to the destination. You're going to include that as an attribute here, and then when you put this inside an additional encryption envelope, it will protect the other elements of this when you send it along to that hop.
Got it.
And then you'll do this multiple times once per right. Key.
So it's just Russian dolls encryption of the messages.
Yes. And the important part is that let's see if we've got a diagram here. That's not a great one. The important part is that no one along the path sees anything other than the next hop that they're involved with, and they then an encrypted payload.
That's what I assume. Okay, thanks.
Yes, and this probably needs to be pulled out into a doc that focuses more specifically on the message without quite as much background, but we haven't done that. The mediators and relays discusses the various elements of moving something along, and so this is a good foundational one if you haven't experienced this yet. And here's some examples of this Russian doll nesting here with envelope images. Right, here's the message that you're actually sending. You're encrypting to the recipient, and then the both the light pink and the dark pink here are routing keys that are involved, and then the endpoint listed is actually for this first agent. The agent's RS mediator in this case.
Yes. Great. Super that's diagrams.
That's the pieces that live there. Yes. Those diagrams were made by other more wiser and articulate people than myself.
Can I have one more question, Robert, here?
Please.
You said that basically the last of the routing keys is the most important for the service endpoint as the first one, right? How do you take care of the ordering within that array? Because as far as I know, in JSON LD, this will be a little bit tricky, right? Isn't it?
No. So we have some conventions. There is another thing here that talks about JSON LD compatibility. In JSON LD, lists are not ordered, and we have thrown that out within the context of DID communication. Order matters unless you specify otherwise. I forget where it is in here. Here it is. Here's a thing about ordering. That says the orders of items in arrays are not significant, and we reverse that assumption. You can specify that something is not ordered in JSON LD, or that it is ordered, and we've defaulted them to be ordered unless you specify otherwise. So the practical effect of that is that when you process routing keys, you're going to do it from the first key to the last key in order.
That would be intuitive.
Thanks.
Yeah, I don't know why JSON LD did the unordered thing. That was weird. But it's such an odd case that it made sense to reverse that. So keys in order.
By the way, JSON LD was reversing JSON's own spec. So JSON says they are ordered. JSON LD said, no, we don't want to treat them as ordered. And we're just saying, no, we're going back to JSON, which had the right idea to begin with.
Yes, absolutely. So in that way, you'll just process them from the beginning to the end. The JSON LD document talks about other strategies we have employed to be JSON LD compliant while avoiding much of the baggage that JSON LD normally requires.
Hi, guys.
Tobias.
Yeah, how's it going? Hey,
I've been channeling my inner Tobias and doing a mediocre job talking about.
I think he's better than the real Tobias. So real back to sleep, and we'll just keep Sam going here.
My Dark accent Rock. Isn't nearly as cool, though.
Yeah, you got to work on that part, Sam.
Yeah, I think I may be too late in my life to pick up a Kiwi accent. So here's where we are. This is the meat of it, and the stuff down below is examples. Is there any? Any other conversations, questions, comments? We specifically want to hear if you think this is a dumb idea. It doesn't do any good to propose a standard that people are going to ignore. And this is a pretty fundamentally important thing to get right if we're all going to be interoperable. And so if there is anything about this that bothers you or that you find troublesome to implement, we would really like to hear about it.
Maybe one more question about the priority. Is it required in that context, or can we basically treat it as like first in, first out? Like the most important on top.
Tobias, you want to answer that one? We have discussed that one before, and I think the preference for including a priority was more or less a weak way of making it explicit instead of anything else.
Yeah, that was really to create to disambiguate when you had multiple routes for the same recipient keys. So, for example, if you wanted to send a message and there was multiple endpoints specified for the same recipient keys, the priority was the way to disambiguate that. But that was really a convention that was brought about because of that edge case. But if we don't think it is a priority, to use the term here, then we can take that away and live with that not being an explicit convention.
I'm just wondering what will happen if you will have two types with the same priority set by accident, if it will be still valid, the doc, or how this will be treated.
So anyway, the object notation is definitely not going to enforce that's invalid. So it would have to be a semantics layer convention. So I agree with that. And then obviously, because this is JSON-LD, there is no enforced ordering there either. So it depends what we want to do in that domain.
Since this is inside of a DID document, we did not, I don't know that we specified that the ordering of services mattered. According to JSON-LD, it doesn't matter. And so the listing the priority explicitly was our way of solving that problem without trying to go redefine all of a DID doc.
Which is generally a good idea. And you just have to turn around and say, all right, if you have two services of the same priority order, then either one, you just they have to be prepared to select them at random.
Yeah. A good use of the priority, for example, would be if there's two endpoint types listed and you have a preference for one over another. You might prefer WebSockets over HTTP or something, or prefer HTTP over WebSockets if you're listing both. It might also be that you have sort of a priority route to deliver messages, but you have another one in there for secondary, but you'd really rather that they be used in that order. For whatever intended reasons you have. So the priority is just a way of making explicit the unfortunate choice of JSON-LD to remove ordering. So this solves that problem a little bit.
Yeah, I guess the identification here is there's nothing stopping at a semantics layer from someone constructing a DID doc with priority equals zero in two places anyway, because there's no way to invalidate that. So it is just something for the implementer to be aware of.
Did we decide that this is required?
No, we didn't decide it was required. I carried it over from the previous definition of the DOT conventions because at least it warranted discussion.
I think allowing multiple with the same priority allows load balancing. Like you would in mail, lots of DNS services, you have multiple endpoints and
it
all the ones at the same priority get load balanced. And then you can have, multiple levels of priority that have multiples in each level.
Yes. If we intend that to be the meaning, we should say that in this document.
I think that would be a good way to make it make sense to people.
That is exactly what we said in the XRD and XRD aspects for service endpoints to the word. We just have to, you have to put that explicitly in the, in the RFC.
Right. So if it's not present, you can pick one at random. If it is present, then please respect while you're doing it. And if there's multiple ones of the same priority, you can also say that a priority of zero is assumed if nothing is explicitly included. And then if there are multiples of the same priority, please choose one at random, and that will enable the load balancing.
So who owns this RFC that's going to make that change?
Tobias and Stephen Curran has. Tobias, can we lean on you for this?
Yeah. So you want me to just add some notation around the priority and maybe an example in terms of how it's used in the used in DNS?
Yes.
Yep.
Yep. So, and then include the expected behavior. We have the it is mandatory that this field is set thing right here. So we might want to either decide whether it's optional or not. And then what the behavior is if it's missing. And then if there are multiple things of the same, of multiple.
So are we comfortable with it being mandatory, or would we like the default behavior, if it's omitted, it should be treated as a priority of zero?
The latter would be my, because a lot of developers would just say, I only have one of these, I don't need it.
Yeah. Okay. Yep.
The latter being optional?
Yes.
Yes, I vote for the same.
So it's only until you have multiple endpoints do you need to actually start specifying a priority?
Right.
Yep.
Yes. Okay. Other topics?
So I wanted to sort of raise the points around whether or not we're going to allow the recipient keys and routing keys to be inline ones of a free format. I don't know whether or not that's really been discussed, or whether or not recipient keys and routing keys are going to be array of did key references, or
Can I comment on that, Tobias?
Yeah, go for it.
In my work on the peer did spec, I've been trying to make the data structures in the did document compatible with the need for a CRDT kind of semantics. For those who might not be familiar with that acronym, conflict-free resolution, conflict-free replicated data type, sorry. It turns out that it's much, much, much easier to do that if I don't have inline stuff. So in the peer did spec, I've been requiring that you define all of your keys and then you simply have references to them elsewhere. Now, if we say that we tolerate any of these things being inlined, there's actually a good reason why we want to, which is in the case of ephemeral stuff, having them inlined is helpful. And so I'm not saying what I'm saying because I'm trying to convince everybody to never do inline, but I'm trying to point out a tension. It really feels to me like it's not a great idea to say anywhere that you can be trying to name keys, you can also just define keys right in line. It seems a little bit weird.
To back up your point there, Daniel, I 100% agree. And I think the ambiguity in inline key produces, quite frankly, it bugs me because we don't know what the cryptographic primitive or the format of the key is when we define it inline. It feels like a very weak convention. And by using a key reference here, we're unlocking all the power of the did doc, which, you know, we have the data model backing a public key specified in the did that allows us to know exactly how to prepare that key and how to use it. And so I would explicitly say that dig key references are the only thing that should feature here, and how that works in an ephemeral mode, I think, is another branch of discussion.
I like the idea to pull this thread just a little bit further. I like the idea that the operation is the same between a service block here and the inline service block used as a decorator. And so one of the arguments that could be made, and this is a little bit difficult for brevity, but one of the arguments could be made is that the service decorator needs to be expanded to allow not only the service declaration, but associated keys, such that references could be used in that place. I like the idea that there's as much similarity between them as possible, because it makes the development easier. You know, if I have an inline block that's the same as something that I get from a DID document, then I can just take either of those and pass it to a function and do the required thing.
So I just want us to acknowledge that if we do this key referencing, that we have resolution going on all over the place. And we have to take that into consideration.
This is how it's communicated, not necessarily your internal representation. Meaning you may wish to store or return something and pass it around your code that has pre-dereferenced keys. It does not require that you last minute dereference the keys in your own processing.
Sure, but you have to dereference at some point. And
yes,
that's where it becomes very difficult, is because there are going to be implementations where you're trying to dereference a key last minute and the ledger's not down, or you don't have internet access and now you can't decrypt a message even though you have all the data, you know, there.
It also does, I think, make this a little bit different in constrained device use cases, where you might be intentionally putting an inline key in there in order to not require the other party to do anything, to have any interaction with any ledger at all. And if we do decide that it must be a queue, no, not necessarily. So,
but you must have got this. So the thing is, if this service block is a part of the DID and all the keys are actually featured in the DID, then you shouldn't have to do any. You'll be doing internal resolution on the copy of the DID you have locally.
So
if it relies on keys, sorry?
This draws out the important difference. There's a difference between keys that are key references in the same document and DID key references that are key references to a different document. And so what Kyle's saying is true. The complexity shows up when you actually have a DID key reference that references a different document. If it's referencing the same document, you're right. It's local resolution and for relatively easy to resolve.
So go ahead.
At the risk of maybe going further down a rabbit hole, one way to resolve the reference thing is that we have a fairly compact crypto suite type that if you allowed for each string that is a DID specification to replace it with a structure that has the ID and the crypto suite type, then you wouldn't have to do any references. You would know how to process the crypto.
I like that as well. And I looked around for existing specifications for keys and I couldn't find one. Is anyone else aware of an existing convention that might work, or would we have to make one?
Sounds like we're writing another spec.
Well, hopefully not.
There's a whole...
Well, the crypto suite type it for the authentication block is already specified for in a DID doc.
But it's a block, not just a string.
Well, that's what I'm saying. You would be able to replace every string with a block.
Oh, yeah, well, you could make the processing really complicated?
Yeah. So the reason I thought DID key references were useful means that if you were to roll a key in your DID doc, you wouldn't have to update your service block potentially. Or if you're talking about a remote key, such as like one of your routing keys is someone else's key because it's going through them as an intermediary, you can talk about it as a key reference and you don't need to update your DID doc when they update their key. And that's the benefit unlocks. When you're talking about doing an inline block, then I think we should be looking for a convention that's really compressed in format, like potentially a custom binary format, because we want brevity there, and like a small JSON object will still not give us a small enough representation that means that it could be a part of a QR code, for example.
Yeah, those are good points. Yeah, I was trying to avoid having to come up with a new syntax, but those might be good reasons to have a new compact syntax. There's not a lot of information you might need to just be able to do the crypto on the public key to do verification. But references allow you to do key rotation and stuff like that.
Yes. I like inline keys, but I'm against blocks. And specifically, if we have a list of things in routing keys, or anytime you can have a key and it's either a string that's a key reference or it's a block, then it makes the programming a lot harder. If it's a string that is a did key reference or it's a string that's an inline key, that's a lot easier to process.
I was going to say, is it a reality that we're never going to be able to get away from the need for key references, and therefore we should just count on building efficient caching infrastructure and not try and force everything in inline keys, because you're also going to have to duplicate keys a lot if you can't reference them.
Well,
the problem with the caching mechanism is that it very, very quickly turns into a potential attack vector in terms of, like, if you're caching, you know, every hour or something like that, and somebody rotates their key every 15 minutes or something, then you need to update your caches. And you have to like build around the idea of how long and how quickly people are updating their did docs.
Man, if you update your key every 15 minutes, I'm unfriending you.
I was going to say, Kyle, well, I appreciate that. You're never going to get just moving from if you're going to say, okay, there's no caching, then you got a much bigger problem, right? Because you got to cache. If you don't cache dead documents, you'll get involved all the time. So you're going to have to protect the cache no matter what.
Yeah, I think we have to cache because key rotation, when people start to use it the way they're supposed to use it, means that, you know, inline references are going to be problematic.
Yeah, don't get me wrong. I definitely think we need a caching mechanism. I just think we need a way to, like, you know, subscribe to did doc when it's updating, so that we can like push out a notification to people and say, well, hey, it's been updated. You need to go not rely on your caching or something like that.
Pure did method does that explicitly. And I believe that having a protocol that allows you to sort of tell people and that it's time to invalidate their cache is a really great idea. And so we can definitely solve that problem with a protocol level support.
That seems like a reasonable plan.
I have another question in that context, just to drop the discussion, add to the discussion. Maybe Dramond and Marcus can comment on that. But as I understood, with the did URL, you can reference, so ask did resolver to give you directly a service with all required information. If you have inline keys, actually that's the only bit of information which you require to actually proceed. If you need to find out each key for each reference, then adds you additional steps. And for example, did resolver could actually resolve those keys directly for you and return the block with the service with inline keys, so you can proceed without further, you know, pinging the server or whatever. Is that somehow related in that?
That's possible, although there's no proof that the did resolver is not misbehaving. And the other feature problem is that if you were to save that the answer from the did resolver as gospel, you would be unaware of the source of the key, and then and you would not be able to handle the key rotations when they occurred. But from a practical sense, if you consider the answer from the did resolver to be a time-bound answer, meaning something you should not cache for a long time or have a relatively short TTL, then I think that that's an appropriate answer.
So I thought of something else on the string thing. Since the keys in this case are not ever going to have a path on them, you could use the query string to provide the equivalent block for all of the key material and still leave it as a string without having to go to a JSON block.
I didn't follow that at all.
Yeah, I'm not sure I followed that.
Without a path, a did URL, the query string applies, you can think of the query string as applying to the actual did itself or the did document. So you could have the did reference, the did block that has the other information, the block like the crypto suite type, attached as a query string on the recipient key string in this case. So you would have a question mark, and then you would have the fields, but now in a URL format, so that you can do the standard tooling for resolving a DID URL to extract any crypto information on an inline. So you can have the inline still be a string, but have all the information we need by using the DID query syntax.
So by encoding it as a query string, then that is our serialization format, and we just have to decide what the query parameters are.
That's right.
For the various aspects. That's actually a pretty darn good approach that seems to follow with the other resolution properties that we've been talking about. So quick point of order. I'd like to move on in about 2 minutes to turn the time over to Daniel Hardman to talk about DIDDoc conventions. But let's continue for the next couple minutes if we have more stuff.
So do we need to do an action item on that, or is that just a note to?
Would you be able to raise an issue or a question that just outlines that syntax?
Sure.
So we can chat about it.
That's a super good idea.
Right,
I mean, that's an issue in the Aries RFC repository.
Yeah.
Sam.
Okay. All right.
Just quickly, bring that up before I came online. Were there any other action points for this RFC apart from updating the priority description?
And that's 23, right? Is that the one we're talking about?
We are on 67.
67. Okay.
So I think the only two points are how to handle inline that we've just discussed, and the expanded commentary about priority. Is there anything else? Again, if you have an objection to this, even if you don't want to fully articulate it right now, we'd really love to know that you have one.
So for the at context, where would actually, would that be in the service of the array, the top of the service array, or that would be in the top of the document?
That would be in the service array because it's the type just for this service block.
So for each service object, you need an at context.
Yes.
Well, what, Sam, are you, the at context can apply to the, to wherever you need it. You could make it, but then you'd have to repeat it in every service block versus just putting it at the top of the.
But doesn't the at context specify what kind of service type we're looking at? Or is that what type is supposed to do?
No. That's what type does.
Then we have just created a central registry for service types.
No. The at context is decentralized.
I know, yeah. But if you declare one at context that indicates that service types must exist within that, now we've just centralized the directory of service types.
I see what you're saying. In that case, I'm wondering whether we should even. Oh, well, then in that case, what I would suggest a different answer, which is. One at context for DIDCOM that defines the recipient keys and routing keys properties, and then just let type use a URI. Unless you want to define a handful of well-known DIDCOM types and then allow any other URI in the type field.
Well, the compromise would be we take some the standard stuff like hopefully DID communication, we put it in the same LD context that applies to the document as a whole, and then if anyone wants to override it, they simply include their overridden context inside of the subblock.
Yes,
exactly. That allows for both the common case and for the extra case, but we'd have to indicate that that is the desired behavior that we're looking for.
Right. I'm just saying that you don't even have to take that second step if all you want to do is provide your own URI for the service type.
You mean a fully qualified type?
Yeah. I think we're going to end up with matching type on fully qualified URI anyway. So.
Well, because technically the fully qualified type is the concatenation of the context and the type. And so if you, specifying at context allows you to not fully define the type every single time. Yes. You know, if you have a bunch of types that are sort of grouped together within the context. And so you can always override it that way. So what this would do is this would change to an at type right here to be JSON-LD compliant in that. And then this would either be relative to the overall document if it's a common value that's included, or it could be a fully specified context, which in the problem is solved either way.
Yes.
I think also in the did document specification, you can actually have more than one URIs as at context, which is determined as an ordered set. And so the default one, which is from W3C, is always the first one. But if you have a second one, that actually that's where you can extend your types.
Yes. Yeah, and that's what we're talking about doing for basically didcom, diddocs.
Yep. I am reluctant to need lots of JSON-LD wise processing looking through service service blocks, because now I have to have a fully capable JSON-LD engine in order to figure out what's really going on because of all of the myriad ways we can do it. And this is dangerous because did docs are squarely within JSON-LD land, but it would be really, but my goal is that we sort of minimize the crazy as much as possible, so that when you're actually writing code to process these and you're not involving a full JSON-LD context processor, that you can still abide the spec.
Yep.
So the only other outstanding question I had on this diddoc convention is, everyone happy with the service endpoint value either being a URL that has a scheme that has like transport considerations defined for like HTTPS, or it also being another did URL, a valid did URL, because there is the potential to nest when you are preparing. I'm pretty sure I documented as an example in this hype where you're using an intermediary and your did doc defines how to prepare the message for the first two steps, and then the service endpoint is a did URL that the sender then resolves and continues and carries through the prepared message to complete preparing it to send to the ultimate recipient, if that makes sense.
Yes. It makes a lot of sense, because you're going to have many times where you're referencing a service endpoint, for instance, of an agency provider.
Yep. Cool.
And you want them to define the actual concrete service endpoint.
Yeah, I like that, but we should make sure that we have like good examples of what that would look like to make it clear what's going on there.
Yes. It's really worth calling out, explaining, providing an example, make sure it's very clear.
Yep.
I think the did resolution specification is going to have to generally talk about that.
Pointing to keys and pointing to endpoints in another document, I think, are incredibly useful patterns.
Yes.
What we already have is on OpenAI on the did resolution spec that the service endpoint can be another did, which would then trigger a child resolution process basically to resolve that other did to find the final service endpoint.
Yes, it's likely to be the same did, or the same did document at least, that's also in the last routing key in your list, because the key lines up with the service endpoint, which means that you're likely going to get a 2-for-1 there.
Yeah, so we have that somewhere. I will post the links into the chat.
Okay, we need to move on, but thank you for this, and please get involved in the discussions about this so that we can have some updates to this document and move it down the line of statuses as we're doing. Cool. So,
can I ask a very pragmatic question about this? But just before we move on,
no.
Who? No. Yeah, okay.
Go ahead.
Where are we planning on implementing this? Is this going to be in an Aries language library, or do we want it in a lower level library and accessible? And who is expecting to do that work?
I think there's multiple places where this will get implemented for various purposes. Not that we're going to redundantly make them necessarily, but sometimes you're going to be reading this data. Sometimes you're going to be writing this data. And I think it belongs in various places. For example, So if we have code in an Aries SDK that allows you to start with a key or maybe a did in a key and end up with what the endpoint is and what the routing stuff is, you're going to have a method that goes and looks at your local cache to be able to find those things.
And who's currently working on implementations of this? Tobias, has your team started?
We have, at the moment, we're not working on this exactly. We have sort of a previous implementation of this floating around an agent framework. We were, before what was called DID messaging, or that was the convention, but the conventions and the DID doc that we transmit are essentially the same. So we have a partial implementation in agent framework, and we are looking to create a more complete implementation in the future.
With better DID doc support in Aries SDK, there's a lot of this that will land there, just out of convenience.
And that was part of my question, is if we want this in, if we want an Aries SDK that implements this, or if the agent framework is doing it at a higher level, and maybe that's the right place to do it. That's what I'm trying to understand.
And I think that this this needs to be involved with whatever piece of this, the system manages relationships. If we decide that the right place for that is in the Aries SDK, then I think that's the right answer. Also, John Callahan, you asked in the chat, where's the subsequent discussion regarding service endpoints? We want to have that in Rocket Chat or in Aries RFC issues in the GitHub repo.
So we're obviously also implementing this in the diff universal resolver, and we're going to resume the weekly calls on the DID specs tomorrow. So you're also welcome to join that to work on the specs themselves.
Okay.
Thanks, Marcus. I'll make sure we look at that as we prepare to do our end.
Okay. Now I'd like to pass the remaining time over to Daniel Hardman for talking about pure DID implementations. And I'm going to stop sharing.
Hey guys, let me share my screen here. I'm going to do a very rare thing and share my whole desktop because I have several different windows worth of stuff to show you guys. Last week I said that the pure DID spec was, you know, worthy of serious study and feedback and so forth. Since last week, I've had several interesting interactions, and we've fixed a couple of bugs in the pure DID spec and had, I think, two or three different pull requests merged. And meantime, I've also been writing some implementation code that I could share with the world so that others of you could be unstuck and start using this or building your own implementations if you wanted. So that's kind of what I wanted to talk about today. Let me start by showing you a new section of the spec that's been written. As I wrote the some unit tests and implementation stuff, I realized that implementing pure DIDs is not a monolithic thing. There are several logical kinds of or postures maybe you'd want to take with respect to pure DIDs. And I think most of us that are wanting, you know, rich behaviors will ultimately end up taking the most ambitious posture. But it's surprising how much you can get done with very little effort. And so I wanted to show you what those little amounts of effort are. So this is my attempt to kind of describe my learnings after I worked on the implementation. There's a base level of support that you can probably implement in a few minutes in any code base, which is just about recognizing pure DIDs. There is in the spec a regular expression you can use that will tell you whether you have a pure DID. And there's a section early on that talks about correctly recognizing and handling pure DIDs, where it gives an example of one and the regular expression that matches it. And then it talks about how to compare two pure DIDs. There's a little bit of a case sensitivity issue that you need to be aware of. And so this is a JavaScript function that does a correct comparison of two pure DIDs. And there's a Python equivalent that's also checked into the GitHub repo where this spec exists. So that's really probably in, I don't know, 5-10 minutes of time, if you're comfortable with regular expressions, you could have your code base implement the recognition level one of did doc or appear did support. Okay, then above that level one, there's two paths here. They deal with whether you accept peer dids and whether you give peer dids. And I think it's possible to make different choices about how aggressive you want to be on both of those fronts. For example, we could imagine, I'll talk about the Indie blockchain since I can make wild claims about it and mostly get away with it there. I think the Indie blockchain code could probably be modified such that it accepts a peer did as the signer of a transaction, if we wanted to do something like that, relatively quickly. That would be an example where accepting peer dids is different. The ledger would not deal in peer dids itself. It wouldn't create them. But if you submitted a transaction and asserted that it was signed by a particular peer did, it would be able to just shrug its shoulders and say, okay, that's a legitimate peer did, and I've done really basic validation of it. That's fine. That would be an example of a level 2A support for peer dids. You could get more sophisticated, and I'll talk about the distinction between static and dynamic in a second. On the other side, you could say, well, I want to give peer dids. I'm actually generating peer dids myself. And one of the things that I think we've kind of used verbal shorthand for that we need to pick apart is two halves of a relationship don't have to be using the same did methods. So you could have Alice who has did method A that she's using and Bob who has did method B, and the Aries connection protocol, the did exchange protocol, doesn't care what those two methods are or whether they're the same. All it cares about is whether you end up knowing what one another's dids are and being able to resolve them when you're done. And so you could easily establish a relationship where half of the relationship is based on a BTC did and the other half is based on an ETH did or an IPFS did or whatever. That works just fine. And in the same way, because you could do that, you could support peer dids, but only outgoing and not incoming, or vice versa. So that's what the left-right dichotomy in this diagram represents. Let me talk about dynamic versus static. It turns out that it's actually trivially easy to implement peer dids if you're static, if you're dealing only in static. What I mean by static is a did that once its did doc has been created, never changes. Now you might say, that's stupid. Why would we have a did doc that's incapable of changing? And I agree that that does eliminate some important benefits. However, if you are going to have a very short-lived relationship, there may be cases where that actually makes sense. You don't really need key rotation for a 3-minute relationship. And in the same way that static agents make sense for certain use cases, I think static dids make sense. And the effort to implement static versus dynamic is an order of magnitude different. Because if you're talking only about static, you don't have to have any of this micro ledger delta logic. You don't have to support the sync protocol that talks about whether the did doc has evolved since you last saw it. You don't have to do anything. I mean, literally the amount of code that you write is astonishingly small. It's when you get to the dynamic level that now you have to start to pay the cost of being able to apply deltas and handle CRDTs, validate the signatures of people that are trying to change the did doc, apply authorization rules, all that kind of stuff. So hopefully that makes sense. And before I kind of go on to the next topic, any questions about what I've said so far? Okay, I'll assume
not. Nope, very clear.
Okay, so there's a discussion then in the spec now about what these different kinds of support choices might mean and when it might be appropriate to pick one versus another. And here's a guess about what this might take and so forth. Bottom line is implementing support where you accept static peer dids from others is probably a few hours of coder time. If you already know how to kind of process dids in the abstract in your code, it's really just not a lot of work. Giving static peer dids to others is also not a lot of work. And so when I started working on my implementation, let's see if I can bring that up. This is a Python code base that implements a package called peer did. And this package is currently available on PyPy. And it is not 100% done, but it does have some meaningful functionality in it already. I wanted to just show you, this is all of the code to support did docs at the static level, both giving and receiving static did docs. That's it. It's just not very much. Now I'm not done with the dynamic side by any, I haven't barely even scratched the surface on the dynamic side, but I think I pretty much can predict instead of, you know, 145 lines of code, it's going to be maybe 500 or 1,000 lines of code to do the dynamic side because of the protocol management you have to do. But it's not going to be an overwhelming amount of code. So the other thing that happened in the spec this last week, let me go back, show you. This is the my fork of the peer did method spec repo. And I had to show it to you in my fork because there's a PR that it hasn't been merged yet. But I created a folder in the peer did method spec with test data in it. And I started committing files that have things that would allow us to test whether you're compliant at a particular level. And all of the tests are done in the form of data files rather than code. I mean, there's a little bit of code to use the data files, but I tried to do it mostly as data files so that there's very little code that you have to write in any given programming language to test your compatibility. So back over to my Python code here. This is my level one test in Python. And what I've basically done is up here at the top, I've got some stuff that says, okay, go load some data files that follow a particular naming convention. And then my tests are, do I handle good dids correctly at level one? If so, then every file that matches this good did prefix should cause me to behave a certain way when I call is valid peer did. And do I handle bad dids correctly? If I call is valid peer did and invert its return type, then I should get, not is valid did on all of the bad did data and so forth. And so this is really all of the tests for level one compliance in Python. Let's see. What else did I want to cover quickly? Oh, okay. Two other sections of the thing that I wanted to talk to you about. So this is browsing the peer did spec at an unmerged pull request. And it's unmerged because I want community feedback. But during my testing, I decided that I wanted the following behaviors. This is me asking for feedback here. I decided that I wanted to reserve all of the peer did values that have identical hex digits. So peer dids that have all zeros in them, peer dids that have all ones in them, peer dids that have all twos in them and so forth, and give them some special meanings. So the peer did that is all zeros is kind of like dev null. If you try to have a relationship with that peer did and you send it a message, it basically swallows the message and does nothing. And what's interesting about this is you don't have to establish these dids are like having a predefined connection to the did. So you send it there and the message disappears, which means if you're using a one-step notification protocol, you will always be able to send a message and succeed when you send it to that did. And if you're using a two-step request response protocol, you will always time out waiting for a response, which is kind of a useful thing to have in testing. Then the anywise self did, which is all ones. And here's some things that you should be able to do with that. The pairwise self did, two dids that are pre-allocated in a three-way relationship with self. And then a did that is corrupted, defined to return invalid data when you try to resolve it. Anyway, there's more detail here, but I'd love feedback about this section of the doc. There's a PR against spec where you could leave feedback on that. So that's that topic.
I have a quick question on that. So the anticipation here is that this piece is created from a hash. So it is improbable but possible that the hash would return something of all the same character, right? And so by making them the test be all of the same, this requirement anticipates that when you're generating a valid pure did that is not a reserved value, you'd simply run a quick test to see if you happen to magically stumble upon one of the reserved ones, and then you just like repeat the loop or something.
Yeah, but just for scale here, we're talking about 16 possible collisions out of a space of 2 to the 256th power, which to me isn't worth writing the line of code that tests for it.
So you're arguing that it's so improbable that it's probably not worth considering the case.
It's so improbable that if you tried to do this by having every computer on the face of the earth generate hashes at top speed between now and the end of eternity, you still wouldn't have more than a 1 in trillion chance of ever having it happen once.
I'll accept that. Okay.
But I mean, you know, crypto people and math people could tell me if I'm right. That's my understanding.
Yep.
Hey, Daniel, this is Marcus. First of all, I'm looking forward to reading this in more detail, probably in the next few days. Just one immediate reaction. Couldn't you also just use sequential numbers, like you start with 0 and then 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, in case you may want to reserve more than 16 at some point?
Yes. Yes, maybe that's a better way to do it. So if you think after reading this that that's a better way, feel free to raise a bug or whatever. Like I said, this is not merged into the spec, so it's just a PR against the spec right now because I wanted feedback.
I see your question in there. Do we need other key types? Can you expand on what you're thinking was there?
Yeah, so right now, this is another spec that got, it's an ARIES RFC that got merged a few days ago, and it's just in the proposed state. So this is not, community doctrine or anything. But I decided that I wanted to document some identities for testing and debugging purposes, kind of in the same way that people who've been around internet circles know that example.com was reserved very early on in kind of the growth of the internet stack, as we're going to just say that example.com always behaves a particular way so that we can write URLs and know that they won't be dereferenced. Somebody can't go out and register example.com and make it mean something, and therefore you can safely use things that contain example.com in specs without causing collisions or going places. So there's that notion of example.com out there in that world. And then many of you are probably familiar with Microsoft and MSDM stuff that uses Contoso as a sample imaginary company that has a database and a website and all this other stuff. And basically I thought it would be nice to have some predefined identities that are carefully documented. One that needs to be documented is this identity right here, which we're using in the early part of many message type URIs. And so I wanted to permanently record, here is what this thing means, here's what its ver key is, et cetera, et cetera. And then I said, you know, we should have some fake identities that are permanently documented as well. And so I created a did, Alice Sov 1 did, that has one defined public key, and I actually published both the public and the private key for that DID here, so that in testing we could say, oh, we're using key one here. We know what that thing means. You could imagine debugging using this key or something like that. And then I defined a Bob many did and so forth. And I created keys, not just for the ED25519 world that I mostly live in, but there's a SECP256 key. There's two different RSA keys, one 1024-bit and one 496-bit. And so given this stuff, if you go back over to the peer did spec, I'm saying that the Bitbucket did, if you try to resolve it, should return a did doc that contains these three keys. Well, one of those is an ED25519 key, one of them is a SECP256 key, and one of them is an RSA key. The net effect of this being that anybody from any of those three crypto worlds should be able, if they have a did resolution, recognize the Bitbucket did, to send a message to that did using whatever crypto is convenient to them without trying to invent new did documents or whatever, and it'll just work.
Okay.
And so what I was asking about here, do we need other key types, is does the ED25519, SECP256, and RSA set cover everything that's interesting, or are there more that we should put in there?
In DIFF, those are the only three that we've ever talked about. So, and that's the broader community that I've seen interacting with it. So it's possible other ledgers may be using other stuff, but I haven't seen anything other than those three. Hmm.
I didn't really talk about this one, but this is actually maybe the most interesting one of all. A DID that means yourself. It's kind of like localhost or a loopback adapter in the IP stack, where you want to say, look, send a message. Imagine going to your DIDCOM routing stuff and saying, route this message to the following DID. Well, the DID just causes it to come right back to yourself without going through any mediators or relays or whatever. And what that allows you to do is take the layers of communication and routing stuff off the table in a test or a debugging situation, such that you can concentrate just on the primitive message emitting and message receiving functions and know that nothing in between could have messed them up. And you trust yourself. So the message trust context that comes back should be very high, and you should have low latency and so forth. And anyway, the more I thought through these, the more I thought this might be a useful idea. The other thing that happened over the week is Marcus you haven't raised the PR yet, Marcus, but you sent me an email about this thing you're working on, which is, let's see if I can find your, I have it in a tab somewhere. Maybe it's this one. Ah, yes, here it is. So Marcus, being the DID resolution guru that he is, has started working on a protocol for resolving DIDs in a DIDCOM protocol style, meaning you send a message to an agent, the agent gives you back an answer. Marcus, I hope I'm not stealing too much of your thunder. All I wanted to say about this is so awesome, and it probably should replace this section of the peer did spec. The peer did spec basically has an early and primitive version of what Marcus is proposing, when we say, look, here's how you resolve a did doc over messaging. You simply send this kind of message, which I call a state request message, and you get back a state response. So I'm looking forward to updating this section of the spec as soon as Marcus is ready to turn his thing into a PR against the Aries RFC's repo.
Yeah. Let me work on this a few more days, and I'm also looking forward to review the peer did spec. And then I agree it could be useful to also use that for in the place where you described. Although that was not my initial motivation, it was more of having a DIDCOM protocol as a binding to talk to a remote deed resolver, which we talked about quite a bit on this call. But I agree it could be useful also for the deed.
It's really a surprising, Marcus, how much overlap there is. I mean, it's like 90% overlap. Yours just is a little bit more better generalized than mine was. Mine was only thinking about peer dids, but yours works for any kind of did. But there's no reason why peer dids should have a special protocol when a generic one would work fine.
Yeah, I agree.
So anyway, I guess the moral to the story here is we've made significant progress on the peer did spec this past week, and I hope you walk away from my little scrolling here through the did doc code saying, oh, that's all the code I would have to write? Yeah, it's really not very much. I had somebody reach out to me saying, hey, I'd be interested in Kotlin support. I could maybe help write some. There now is Python code you could look at and do a port if you wanted. Like I say, it's not complete yet. This is like level 2.5 support without having begun level 3 support yet. So it's like level 2 is partly done and level 1 is all the way there. In this code base, but if you give me another 2 or 3 days, it'll probably be even more mature, but it's now worth at least looking at. And I think what you'll find is that the basic plumbing for this is actually quite easy to implement. The thing where it gets complicated is you need to have the ability to do didcom before you can do the protocols. And so if you're in a code base that already knows how to do didcom, that's not intimidating at all. But if you're trying to implement something in a code base that doesn't have the ability to do didcom, it doesn't already have a dependency on crypto layers, and it doesn't already know what routing is and all the stuff that we were talking about in the did doc conventions at the beginning of this call, then suddenly it's a much heavier lift. And I'm trying to make it not feel that way, but I don't know how much pain people will experience. Maybe they'll shrug their shoulders and say, yeah, I was going to do that anyway, so I won't count that against the pain of peer dids. Does anybody have any questions?
I do.
Okay.
We have struggled a bit with how to properly connect an agent under test and a protocol test suite. Your like known identities thing could solve that problem. Where the test suite it has a known identity in play, and that way, when testing is enabled on an agent, that there's already something to bootstrap from, and it's fine if it's well known because it's a test suite.
Oh, that's a good idea.
We don't have to dig deeper into that, but that could be a really convenient way to solve this problem, particularly if we had some of these things. I know peer dids are not normally, we don't normally consider something like the universal resolver to handle that. But if the universal resolver code had the ability to give the proper answer back for those known identities, then that could work rather well for some of this. So anyway, we don't have to get deep into that because we're over time anyway. But the light bulb went off in my head when you started talking about that.
Cool.
Awesome. Daniel, thank you for your work. We are out of time, but please raise issues on GitHub, talk in the Aries channels on Rocket Chat, and please be involved. And particularly if there's stuff that you see us discussing that you don't think is going to work for you, please speak up, because we want to make this work for as many people as we possibly can. And the sooner we know about it, the easier it is.
Sam, I just don't think any of this is going to work for me. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Okay.
I should have said everyone but Kyle.
No. Sam, this is the how does everyone please Kyle call, right? Let's just be real.
It's got to all work on the browser.
Shoot that guy. Shoot him.
Awesome. No, Kyle, we love you and we're glad you're here. Thanks, folks. We will talk next week. There'll be a morning call and an evening call, or an afternoon call. So be prepared for that next Wednesday. Thanks, folks. And we will talk to you later.
Thanks, everybody.
Thanks, Sam. Outstanding. You bet. Bye.